Hi, I'm Beth Ogilvy. My partner Susan and I first became aware of the Unitarian Universalist through the medium of a bumper sticker that Kinnear's had that said, "Born okay the first time." When we checked out the church, we learned from the website that this was a welcoming congregation, and that wasn't just a decision someone had made. The congregation had actually prepared for it, worked on it, and that seemed important to me. And now that we've been here a few years, I can say that this is a very safe place for us. You make it a safe place for us. And that is not a small thing, because even here in the most liberal county in the state of California, there are a lot of people who are convinced we were not born okay the first time. At the Castro Valley Pride in July, I was really overwhelmed by the number of straight people who showed up to help staff our table. And this shows not just passive acceptance, but an active commitment to work with us and for us, and that means a lot to me. So, thank you. Last spring, I was talking to Heidi Green, and I said, well, I'm really bisexual, but I say that I'm lesbian because I'm partnered with Susan, and it doesn't seem right to show an interest in men. And Heidi said, but calling yourself a lesbian only eliminates half the human race. If you're really only interested in Susan, you should call yourself a Susan Bean. So today I'm coming out as a Susan Bean. Thank you. And also a bisexual. I realized that my reluctance to publicly claim my bisexuality is based on an unconscious myth that bisexuals are attracted to everybody and therefore naturally promiscuous. So I can tell you now, bisexuals are not attracted to everyone. For me, the essence of bisexuality is being attracted to a person first. I fall in love with a person, irrespective of gender, and then a sexual interest sometimes follows. I fell in love for the first time at the age of 11 with a girl named Susan. In those days, the apex of intimacy was sharing a piece of gum. That I never got that close. By junior high, it was obvious to me that I was different from other girls. They were having crushes on boys. I was having crushes on girls. And by high school, I was starting to feel a little left out of the dating scene, but in 1970, girls did not date other girls, and none of the boys was interested in a tomboy geek like me. That changed dramatically in the fall of 1971 when I started college. Caltech had just admitted its first undergraduate women the year before, so when I started it, there were 1,200 undergraduate men and 60 women. There were 20 horny guys for every woman. That had advantages and disadvantages. But one thing is, they were all geeks. I fit right in. So that was when I learned that men could be attractive too. My senior year, I met my first out lesbian and had my first experience of prejudice against bisexuals. "My brother says he's both," she said. "I don't see how anyone can be both." In spite of that, I had a lovely few years after that in which I was both, dating women and men. And then I fell in love with a male colleague and married him. And it wasn't one of those phony pretending to be straight things. It was the real deal. One thing that puzzles me about my teenage years is that my interest in other girls didn't worry me. I never discussed it with anyone. I just thought, oh, I'll grow out of it. I never thought it was something wrong with me. What was wrong with me is that I've never been completely comfortable in my body, and I always thought this was something I had to fix, my attitude, that is. I don't want to switch to being male, but the ideal for me would be if we could all be either gender, like in that novel by Ursula Le Guin, The Left Hand of Darkness. It takes place on a planet where all the people are gender neutral most of the time. But for a few days each month, they blossom into one gender or the other, and not necessarily the same one each time. And the sexual perverts are the ones who are stuck in one gender all the time. Back on planet Earth, I've come to see that my ambiguous feelings about my own gender will probably always be with me, and that I don't need to try and make them go away. I've reached a kind of acceptance of my non-acceptance, if that makes any sense. Susan and I had our 21st anniversary a few weeks ago. We hope someday to be married in this church. This is partly a political gesture, since the more of us marry, the more ho-hum it will be, and pretty soon the marriage controversy will shrivel up for lack of interest. But it's deeper than that, and it relates to a paradox, which is that this is a congregation that genuinely doesn't care if a couple is married or not, because we understand that the quality of a relationship is what counts and not the legal label. At the same time, I feel that to be married in this church and to have our relationship blessed by Katie and by you would be profound and sacred and healing. Thank you.
When I think about what National Coming Out Day means for me, I feel a physical reminder of that deep breath in, rapid heart pounding flush that I feel each time I take the risk of letting another person into the core of how I define my sexual orientation. I have less of that feeling up here today, partly because many of you already know that I'm bisexual. It's also less scary because, given the warm, embracing nature of this congregation, of each one of you who is part of the Star King community, I feel confident that saying I am bisexual is less of a risk for me than a statement of fact. Nonetheless, it still makes me vulnerable to what you say to me today after the service or in the future, or what you don't say. Coming out is about sharing the deeply personal. It's about taking a risk, about letting another person inside. Telling a person about your sexual orientation when you're anything other than heterosexual, if the relationship has not gone to that level of intimacy before, is like reaching out your hand with an invitation and asking, "Would you walk with me?" I've come out to a lot of people over the years. I've been an activist since the womb, and about sexual orientation since the early 80s when I was in my early 20s. I came out to myself in my first real job when I realized I had a crush on my boss, who is the editor-in-chief of the Santa Cruz women's newspaper. It took me 9 months to summon the courage to tell her how I felt, which was sort of a coming out all by itself. When I finally did, this very wise and worldly woman who was 12 years my senior listened to me attentively, respectfully, and then with a twinkle in her eye, simply said, "I know." Coming out is a gift. If someone comes out to you, it's best to pay attention and treat it as something special and rare. After all, the person is holding out a piece of their heart to you. It's not always obvious that they're offering a gift, because sometimes it's coming out in anger or in fear, usually fear. But if you can hear it, It's a direct call from one heart to another. And if you can respond with your own gift, it's the best validation of the giver's trust in you, because you are, in effect, saying, yes, I will walk with you. So when I think about National Coming Out Day, I think about celebrating the courage to take the risk to let others know my real, authentic self. Coming out is putting my real self out there first before someone else paves the way. Coming out is about intimacy, about vulnerability, and, if you let it, about deepening the conversation and the relationship. Coming out, being real, can be hugely painful. It can result in the loss of livelihood, loss of community, loss of friendship, and even the loss of life. But not coming out, living a lie, destroys the soul, destroys humanity, and destroys joy. National Coming Out Day, to me, is both joyous and sacred. Joyous because we celebrate people being their authentic selves, and sacred because it is the hand held out asking you to walk with me, to witness me, to understand me, to protect me. And not just for me, but for that real and authentic self within each of us.
Hi, everyone. My name is Maya. I'm a youth activist that has grown up at Star King, and I'm really happy that you're all here. I wanted to start by talking about the word ally. Apparently, it's Ally Appreciation Week. I saw a post on the social networking site Tumblr that basically they and some of the LGBT community don't like the word ally. The post went on to say that a lot of people use the word just to be politically correct and state they're not a homophobe. I don't call myself an ally to be politically correct. To me, the word ally means someone who fights alongside you. You're not quite an ally if you just are okay with LGBT people. To be an ally means to go to rallies, raise awareness, sign petitions, stand out on street corners, and maybe change some hearts along the way. My activism started the summer before freshman year, when Cache Valley had its first Pride event. My mom told me that three high school students and a man named Billy Bradford, a gay rights activist in Cache Valley, was having a march for equality and was asking people to help. We both agreed to help spread the news that our formerly very conservative community was having its first LGBT-oriented parade. Once the news spread, there were way too many people attending for the county to give us a parade permit. Billy changed the name of the event to Cache Valley Pride, and we found a new venue in the junior parking lot of Cache Valley High. On July 23rd, 2011, Cache Valley had its first Pride event. I passed out stickers for 5 hours. People performed, spoke, and sold their wares. We had five protesters, but most people that came by were very nice and said that Cache Valley had taken a step in the right direction. This past year, Cache Valley Pride marched in the Rowell Ranch Rodeo Parade for the first time. The support from the crowd was amazing. We had a little radio flyer wagon with a stereo blasting Lady Gaga, Pink, and Fun. I was really nervous starting the parade. I really wasn't in the mood to have anyone yell at me. As we started the route, we saw two men sitting on lawn chairs looking at us. When we passed by, they raised their interlocked hands in support and wore huge grins on their faces. At that moment, I knew the community would receive us well. We passed out flyers for Cache Valley Pride 2012 for about an hour and a half. I came home sunburned, but satisfied that day. Since then, I've volunteered at Cache Valley Pride 2012 and the Cache Valley Pride booth at the Cache Valley Eden Area Fall Festival. Both events went relatively smoothly. Even if there were a couple of negative comments from passersby, I knew I was doing the right thing. I wear my Cache Valley Pride bracelet every day. Because of that, I can't count how many times I've been asked, "Are you a lesbian?" When I reply no, people then ask, "Oh, so you're bisexual then?" The information that I'm straight and wearing a rainbow bracelet confuses a lot of people, even while my straight boyfriend and I are holding hands while wearing our matching rainbow bracelets. Then comes the inevitable question, then why do you wear it? I wear my bracelet to represent my love for my LGBT family members, friends, teachers, classmates, choir members, followers on social networking sites, and people I don't even know. I wear the bracelet to remind myself that we are working for equality and that someday it'll come. I leave you with one of my friend Billy Bradford's favorite quotes said by Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. "The arc of the moral universe is long, but it bends towards justice."
We love that quote from Martin Luther King Jr. because Martin Luther King Jr. found that quote from Theodore Parker, a Unitarian minister from the 18th century. So it's a wonderful thing. Thank you, Maya. Thank you for being willing to stand here. Thank you, Heidi. Thank you for being willing to risk in singing where we also open our... And thank you to all of you who risk in singing along. And thank you to you, too, Beth. And I do have to say, Donald, thank you for taking your partner to your 55th class reunion. How awesome is that? How awesome is that? Yeah. On the Unitarian Universalist webpage, it says in bold type, "Lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and queer ministries." And then underneath it says, "Risking a new vision for our world since 1973. When my sister came out in 1978, I wasn't surprised. She had been my sister since my second birthday, which was the day she was born. And I always knew her as who she was. She didn't change. But she had never been able to speak aloud of her affectional or sexual orientation, which was different from mine, being so interested as I was in boys, and we didn't have that in common. And it was different, too, from our parents who had been married to each other since they were each 24. For something so essential to each of us, our self-understanding, our self-expression about gender, about affection, and about sexual orientation, she was not able to speak aloud or to be understood, to love who she loved. Even in my liberal Unitarian Universalist household, this coming out for my sister was not easy. I would like to be able to stand here and tell you that her brave declaration was met with immediate love and acceptance by our parents. But instead, it was met with doubt, misunderstanding, anger, and selfish hurt. Even for me as a sister, I wasn't exactly sure how to celebrate her joy of being able to be open and to be as open as I was about love and self-expression. And she wasn't actually able to do that, to be open, really. Today, my sister and her wife have been together over 22 years, like Beth and Susan. They, too, are Beth and Susan. My sister's Susan, and her wife is Beth. And they are legally married in the state of Massachusetts, but they're still not able to have their federal taxes filed jointly, and that's only one of a long list of other things. In most parts of the country, their relationship is not acknowledged, and in their professional careers, they must be silent about their personal lives. In 1980, this congregation called a gay man out. He was out to the congregation. Mark Bellatini served here for 18 years, and yet it was not until after he left that we acknowledged that we needed to do our part to become straight allies, because most of us here are straight or straight to some degree. Each of us would then need to, if we were going to become a welcoming congregation, we would need to look at our hearts and truly see where we might come out, where we might come out of our own fear and misunderstandings, and explicitly, openly welcome people of all genders and orientations. I'm reminded again of the ethic of risk, that it is easier to give up on long-term change when one is comfortable in the present, when it's possible to have challenging work or excellent health care and housing and access to fine arts. I'm speaking generally now of the ethic of risk, Sharon Welsh. When the good life is present or within reach, it's tempting to despair of its ever being in reach for others and resort merely to enjoying it for oneself and one's family. But when we reach outside of our own comfort, like Maya has done, for example, but each of us can do, into what is a courageous vulnerability, we then achieve spiritual growth. We are more grounded than in real community. We are living toward that sense of the sacred and meaning-making that makes us more fully whole. We can attend to the question, how are we together? It says in the UUA, on the UUA website, lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and queer ministries, that's LGBTQ ministries, is guided by the vision that someday we will be able to put ourselves out of business, and that oppression against people of all ages, abilities, colors, and economic classes who are marginalized on the basis of sexual orientation and gender identity, whether the oppression be overt or subtle, will be a thing of the past. Let us give thanks to the grace that we are able to do this work here in relative safety and in a place that allows us to see the beauty in each other's eyes, in a place that welcomes all of the colors. May it be so. Amen, and blessed be.